Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
The Bishop joins us now on WGN Radio. Bishop, this is John Williams. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, John. It's good to be with you.
I so appreciate your time. Is that an accurate description of what happened and where we are right now?
Yes, that is correct. I issued this decree saying that Senate President John Cullerton and Speaker of the House John Madigan are not to be admitted to Holy Communion in this diocese because of their obstinate persistence in promoting the manifest grave sin of abortion.
You also said that the legislators who voted for it should be similarly treated. Is that right?
Similarly, but in a slightly different way. Canon 916 is the one that applies to them, and that it says that the person who is conscious of grave sin should not approach to receive Holy Communion. So the burden on that canon is really on the individual, and that one, not knowing exactly who all the Catholic legislators are that voted for this, that's really on their conscience whether or not they should be going to communion. If they voted for this, I would argue that they've committed a grave sin, and just like anyone else who has committed a grave sin, you shouldn't go to communion unless you've gone to confession and confessed your sins and promised to change your way of life and then receive absolution. But in the case of Senator Cullerton and Speaker Madigan, I think their position is clear that it's been obstinate and that they've been very stubborn about their pro-abortion position. That's also been persistent. They've done this for a number of years now. Yeah. They supported HB 40 in 2017 and SB 25 last week. Plus, there's an aggravating factor. I would argue that their leadership roles, they basically helped shepherd this legislation through and see it pass.
So it's a larger sin on their part because of their leadership positions?
I would say so, yes. And I think some of the members of the House and Senate felt pressured to vote for this. And that's what I've heard, is that some of the members had misgivings about voting, but they felt pressured that this is what the leadership wanted, so they had to go along with it.
What would you do if one of them was coming down the aisle and you were there handing out the Eucharist?
Well, first of all, my conversations, what I've heard is that that's not likely to happen. I don't believe that either Madigan or Cullerton come to communion here very, very often. Cullerton's office said he doesn't go to church here. Madigan, I've only seen in church here a couple of times when we had special masses for the legislators and the legal professionals here at the Capitol. And he did receive communion on those occasions, but we've had conversations about that, and I think at this point he would not present himself.
But it would, I mean, it's not just him, it was the other legislators, too, who you think should govern themselves on this. But just humor me, if one of these people who you think should not receive the Eucharist is coming down the aisle, and they came up to you, what would you do?
I would not want to have a confrontation with them during Mass. I would speak to them privately after Mass, or hopefully even before Mass, if I knew they were going to be present there. I mean, it's the same situation, what I'm saying under Canon 916, not presenting yourself for Holy Communion. If you have a situation where people are divorced and remarried without getting an annulment, or if they're cohabiting and they're not married, those are also, objectively speaking, gravely sinful situations, and those people should not be going to communion until they get their status regularized. And I have had those conversations as a pastor before I became bishop, talking with people and saying, look, you can't be going to communion if you haven't gotten an annulment for your marriage. And so I would hope that they would respect that conversation. But the whole point of this is that there would be people coming up the aisle that I wouldn't even know if they've committed a mortal sin or not. So that's really why the burden of the obligation is on them.
Are there other votes for which legislators would take that you would deny them the communion as well? I'm thinking about capital punishment, for instance, things like that.
Well, there are other issues. I mean, there was an example going back to the 1960s when the Archbishop of New Orleans excommunicated three Catholic segregationists, three Catholics who were arguing against the segregation of schools. And the Archbishop was, back in the 1960s when they were first trying to integrate the schools. He was taking a strong position on that, and they were publicly opposing him.
Well, what is the Catholic Church position? Well, what is the Catholic Church position on capital punishment?
Well, the capital punishment is an issue where traditionally for centuries the church has taught that capital punishment is justifiable when the state has legitimately found someone guilty of a capital offense.
Right,
now, more recently, Pope John Paul II and Pope Francis have said that they think that that there are no conditions where capital punishment should be imposed. However, that's not the same thing. It's not saying that capital punishment is an intrinsic evil, which the church argues that abortion
is. So is there anything else like abortion then? Is there anything else for which a legislator would or has cast a vote that you would deny them the communion? And you would call them out specifically by name like this, too.
I would. I mean, I don't want to speculate on what some hypotheticals could be, but I mean, it would have to depend. I mean, if there were legislation that was promoting assisted suicide, that would also be contrary to church teaching.
And would you
euthanasia?
And I'm surprised that we haven't had this conversation about that then, because it seems like that one will probably come. If that was against the church teaching, and I voted for it, and I was a Catholic, then would you publicly call me out and say I shouldn't take the Eucharist?
Well, it would have to be, again, obstinate and persistent. So it wouldn't be just a single vote that would be grounds for calling somebody out by name on that. It would be if there's a persistent pattern, which is what we've seen here with the abortion legislation, that would be, I think, a reason for calling them out on that. Now, we haven't had that at this point yet, but I wouldn't be surprised that if at some point we do have some legislation introduced that would be proposing assisted suicide.
Blaise Cupich has a different view on this, it appears, than you do. He feels that the church should be a little more welcoming to people who have at least sought forgiveness for their sins. You probably saw his statement about this, right?
I did. You know, and as a conference of Catholic bishops, we discussed this actually back 15 years ago in 2004. The issue came up quite prominently when Senator John Kerry was running for president, and people were asking if a pro-abortion politician should be able to receive communion. And what we decided among the bishops at that point is that each individual bishop could make a legitimate decision that might be different from another bishop. It's based on his prudential judgment of his local circumstances. I made my decision based on the fact that I'm the bishop of the capital of our state, and the legislature is right down the street from the cathedral where I live, and you know, the circumstances may be different in Chicago in terms of what the cardinal feels the implications are for the faithful there. However, I would say that, you know, this the approach of trying to, you know, dialogue and hope that the pro-abortion legislators will change their view, it simply hasn't worked, you know, and so, I mean, we see time and again. In fact, if anything, I think it's gotten worse since 2004, where you've got Catholic legislators just simply, at that, you know, 15 years ago or 20 years ago, they were talking about abortion being rare. Now they're celebrating it. You know, after SB 25 passed last week, you had the proponents of the bill hugging each other, giving high fives, yeah, you know, celebrating the fact that more abortions will be performed in this state. So I think that I just think we have to be clear that you cannot be a Catholic in good standing and be promoting abortion like this.
Your Excellency, then that you talk about they're applauding and being more and more likely to vote for it, and that to me dictates obstinacy. And so I still don't understand why it is you will single out two people, the Speaker and the Senate President, who in the end just have one vote, and not the other legislators who also have that same one vote and voted for it. Why aren't you listing their names?
Well, because I don't know all their names.
Well, but if it's that important, I think you could find out.
I can get you the list, yeah.
Yes, well, you know, what I'm saying is at this point, it is clear to me that Madigan and Cullerton certainly fit the criteria of Canon 915 of being obstinate and persistent. I mean, if other names become clear to me, I would be open to naming those people as well.
Go ahead, Steve.
So if I draw up a list of the Democrats, I mean, it's not hard. Your Excellency, it's not hard to do. I mean, it could be done if it's if it's that important. I don't understand why you, you know, stopped at these two.
Because I did make some inquiries and was not able to get clear answers on who all the Catholic legislators were in this diocese. I did talk to every Catholic legislator in my diocese in Springfield, and I'm happy to report that there's no Catholic legislator, Republican or Democrat, in the Diocese of Springfield in Illinois who has voted in favor of SB 40, SB 25, or HB 40.
Well, are you sympathetic at all to the conundrum this creates for them? Because they've been elected by a secular body to represent the views of the people of their district or of their state. And if that's in conflict with the church, now they're beholden to two different masters, aren't they? So I understand the problem that creates for these guys, their faith and also their responsibility to represent the people in their districts.
I don't think they're beholden to two different masters. Every politician has beliefs and positions on policy matters that they make known to their constituents when they're campaigning. That's why we have campaigns. That's why political parties have platforms, and people vote according to what a person stands for. Now, I don't buy the argument that somebody says that I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I'm not going to impose that belief on anybody else. There's no other political issue where anybody ever says that. Nobody ever says I'm in favor of gun control, but I'm not going to impose that belief on anybody else. Nobody ever says that I think we should have open borders, but I'm not going to impose that belief on anybody else. So I don't know why they can say this about abortion and get away with that as if that's imposing a belief on their constituents. People know what they stand for. The whole point of our political process is to make your values known, and then the values become our laws. And so if a person really believes that abortion is wrong, they should make that a value that they want is embodied in legislation. And if they don't believe that, then they shouldn't be running on a campaign saying, you know, making statements that they're Catholics and then taking positions that are contrary to the Catholic beliefs.
In Springfield, representing the diocese there, Thomas Papraki, the bishop, is on a phone line with us. You may have heard the news that he has said there'll be no communion for Madigan and Cullerton because of their support of what he calls an abominable Illinois abortion rights bill. He's called them out specifically and said they should be denied the Eucharist, at least in his diocese. Lots of questions and comments for you from our listeners. Some support you. Some, you are probably not surprised, don't support you. I just wanted to take a couple phone calls, and we'll start with Joan. You're on WGN Radio. Joan, what's your question or comment? You're on the air.
Thanks, John. And Bishop, I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for taking a stand, being a good shepherd, being a good leader for Illinois. It's a disgrace right now to live in Illinois with that abortion bill. I'm almost getting choked up about that. And I feel like I'm in a minority because I'm pro-life, because everyone else is so pro-choice and makes their voice so readily heard that it makes me feel like I'm not equipped, and I'm learning more so I could be more equipped, even for my own children, to take a stand for what we believe in and to stop doing this. I watched Unplanned, that made me sick, and I just feel like the question I have for you is, what as lay folks here in Illinois, besides prayer, can we do to really help legislatures or other people, change their thinking on this abortion bill?
Well, first of all, I thank you for your words of support, and I just want to encourage you to remain strong in that. I say to people that may be discouraged in the current situation that you have to remember that when Christianity started in the first century, it was in the midst of the pagan Roman Empire, and abortion and infanticide were quite common in the Roman Empire, and so Christians learned how to live in a culture that was very pagan, and we're sort of in a neo-pagan culture today, so we just have to try to be able to be strong and be witnesses of our Christian values. I would also say, in terms of what you should do, continue to make your voice known, and in the end, it really is the constituents that the politicians listen to. Apparently, the leaders that of our government here that I've talked to, they're really not swayed by anything I do. They will be swayed, I think, by what the voters do. So I encourage voters to be strong.
As they should. I mean, there's two tracks here. One is the religious, and one is the secular. And if their personal views does happen to line up with the church's views, if their constituents' views line up with the church's views, I don't think we're having this conversation. But when they don't, I think that's... imagine if it was reversed. Imagine if Cullerton said, or Madigan said, we're not going to vote for this abortion rights bill, even though the people want it, because it's in conflict with my personal faith. I think there'd be a hue and cry over that as well. There's more than one way to look at this. I have to take a quick commercial break. I know that some of you want to express your views to the bishop as well. Bishop Thomas Papraki, just a few more minutes, if you don't mind. Our listeners have been patient to hold on the line. So we'll just start with line number two is next. Julie, you're on WGN. What's your question or comment? Hi.
Well, thank you, John, for taking my call, and I appreciate you having this information on the radio. So I come from a Catholic background. I am a nurse, and so I know the science of, development of a human, as well as I personally...
What's your question? We're short of time. What's your question?
Could have been aborted because I have a birth defect.
Julie, what's your question? We're short of time.
So my more of a comment that, I feel that abortion is a convenience, a procedure of convenience, and that people need to be more knowledgeable about what abortion is, like partial birth abortion. I would really be interested if legislators even understand the procedures and what are being done to these unborn children.
Okay, thank you for the call. I want to bring Clint next. You're on WGN. Clint, your comment or question, you're on the air. Hi, Clint, you're on the air. Hey, Clint. This is not easy for me, Bishop, but a lot of people who are texting and a lot of my phone lines are saying, okay, but what about the priests who have abused minors themselves? I'm not exactly sure how that translates, but I'll just tell you that a lot of people are pressing me to bring that up. Do you have anything to say about that? Would you deny the Eucharist to any priest who had abused a minor as well?
Well, I think just as people are angry about sexual abuse by clergy of minors, they should be angry about abortion. And yes, priests who are unrepentant committing sexual sins, they should not receive Holy Communion either. And there are situations that I'm aware of that priests who were guilty of sexual misconduct with minors were not given a funeral with the same honors that most priests would be given. So there are penalties for priests who engage in this kind of misconduct as well.
Your Excellency, have you ever publicly called them out and say, I will not give you communion in my church?
No, because we're talking, again, about the question of being obstinate and persistent and whether or not someone is sorry or repentant. Now, remember, this whole point, as far as I'm concerned, about calling out people like Madigan and Cullerton, is I'm hoping that they will repent, that they'll have a change of heart. I don't want them to see permanently excluded from Holy Communion. I want them to be pro-life, and I want them to, as soon as possible, come back to be receiving Holy Communion.
But it doesn't work like this. If I am sorry for my quote-unquote sin, then I should receive the Eucharist anyway. Who are you to judge based on the headlines in the newspaper? For all you know, Mike Madigan walking down the aisle has in fact asked for forgiveness. He can't undo the vote, maybe, but he is already repentant.
Well, I think that if he is repentant, then he has to make that known publicly. You know, a person who steals $1 million and goes to confession and says, I'm sorry for stealing $1 million. I really shouldn't have done that. Part of our church's teaching is you have to make restitution. If you're really sorry, you have to give that $1 million back. So I would argue that if Madigan and Cullerton are really sorry for what they've done, then they do have to try to change that legislation. They do have to introduce new bills and try to get HB 40 repealed and SB 25 repealed. I think they have a moral obligation to do that.
Bishop Papraki, I sure appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Thomas Papraki is in Springfield. He is the bishop of the diocese down there.